Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, I'm Luke Jones, in for Matt Chorley on the Red Box Podcast. Thank you very much for downloading. I'm here to bring you all the fun and exciting news, political and Olympic-shaped, without all the boring bits. I'm also here to put the quiz. If you'd like to play, studio@times.radio will get you on. If you want to play on the actual radio show that we do as well. Ahead on this podcast, we love local councillors, but we even love even more young local councillors. We're going to hear from three 18-year-olds who this year were elected to a parish council. We'll find out what on earth they're up to in a minute. First, our gold medal-winning columnists of Chit Chat, Libby Purvis and Rachel Cunliffe.
Is there anything either of you that you think you look at all the Olympic events and think, I could have given that a go, Libby?
Marathon broadcasting, basically.
Marathon commentary. Rachel, what about you?
I was going to say something similar, which is none of the athletes, but I do think I could probably pick up commentating on a sport that I'd never seen before, because a lot of it seems quite generic and easy to transpose from one sport to another. Oh, this is a crucial moment for this sport that I've never heard of. I reckon. I could pick that up. Yes.
I thought that I was watching a bit of the rhythmic gymnastics last night, and Matt Baker wittering on about it. I did think, give me 20 minutes and I could have said similar things to what he was saying about it. He was just sort of reading out scores and saying, oh, this is the key moment. We none of us have any idea. Anyway, let's get back to COVID. Lots of hope around this morning, Libby. Front page of the Times, COVID cases fall as jabs turn the tide. Are you feeling cautiously optimistic as you see all these numbers slowly trickle down?
Yes, I am, and I have been for a while, because the Scottish example is interesting. Once they were out of the football and the schools had broken up, you know, it did sort of fade away. I think the huge events have caused some spikes inevitably, but in a way those spikes may have disguised the fact that people are being quite careful. People everywhere I go, except possibly Latitude down the road, people are being quite cautious and thinking about it and doing tests and keeping away from people they think are vulnerable. And I'm pretty hopeful, actually. I usually am.
Are you not out getting muddy and screaming and shouting at Latitude?
Certainly not. We can hear bang, bang, bang across the fields if we want to. We've got the bass line, that's all you need. No, I'm not good at festivals. I'm not a festival person. It was folk festival. I shall go to Folk East. That's a grand festival. It's like a giant village fete, basically.
Rachel, what about you in terms of the COVID numbers? Are you hopeful?
You're not going to ask me about festivals. My sister was actually at Latitude, so sorry, Libby, that she was contributing.
Keeping the purposes up.
I'm glad they're having a lovely time. I want them to have a lovely time. I just don't want to be forced to put on fairy wings and pretend I like it.
No, I'm probably with you there. I have natural very high levels of anxiety. So every time I'm cautiously optimistic, and I even if I tweet that I'm cautiously optimistic, as I did on Friday, I got a barrage of people telling me that it was too early and they weren't coming down enough. And anyway, they always lag at that point. And how was I so delusional as to think this was good news? And then the cases continued to fall for the next 2 days, and I know that there was a lot that can still go wrong. I know that we haven't had the case numbers from the major July 19th reopening yet, but we do seem to be seeing the result of what transmission looks like when you have two-thirds of your adult population fully vaccinated. And I think that's really positive, and I think that if we want to encourage more young people to get vaccinated, which is obviously a key priority for the government at the moment, then championing this kind of good news when we have it is really important, because it shows do this thing and it can have an effect.
But that's the point, isn't it, Libby, that we've got, as the Times reports this morning, a third of 18 to 29 year olds haven't had their first dose yet, and it's been available to them for well over a month now.
I'm afraid I'm starting to back old Macron's tactic of saying, OK, don't get vaccinated, but you can't go anywhere. I think that might help. I think it's a great, great pity, and I hate the anti-vaxxer demonstrations. I think trying to persuade people, you know, without forcing them to get vaccinated is just, it's the only way. So what can you do? But I think Macron may actually be on the right track, and the Germans are thinking of it too. Just make your life completely miserable and boring unless you get vaccinated.
Should we adopt that here, Rachel?
Can't come on Times Radio until you've got vaccinated.
There'll be a QR code scanner at the door.
The problem is that all of the psychology from previous diseases and things like the MMR vaccine and other vaccinations shows that if you force people too much, if you put too much pressure on them, they go the other way because they panic, or they wonder, well, what aren't you telling me? Why am I getting these sort of high pressure sales tactics? And it can have the opposite effect. Whereas for the majority of people, they need time, and they need to see all of their friends have it, and they need kind of gentle encouragement and just keep giving them the information and obviously access. And that's what increases rates. So I would hate to see a system where we move to mandatory vaccination and actually alienated more people from the health service, which is a worry. I really do think that showing that there is a direct link between personally getting vaccinated and society opening up a bit more, and that the crisis sort of starting to ease, that I think is it would be the key motivating factor. Also, if we've got all these jabs that we're not giving out to young people as their first dose at the moment, could we perhaps bring some of the second doses a little bit earlier? I say this as somebody who queued for an hour and a half to get her second dose early.
Well done.
On Friday.
Where did you queue?
I queued at the Peckwater Centre in Kentish Town, which I don't think is doing them anymore. It's the last day that they were doing them. And the queue was full of people who just really wanted to get double protected and were happy to give up their Friday afternoon to queue around the block in Kentish Town to do that. So the demand is there. And I think that's what we should be focusing on. Look at all these people who want it so much. Maybe you should get yours too.
But if these policy changes do quickly turn everything around, and all these, you know, third of 18 to 29 year olds say, OK, actually, I'm going to go and get my first jab, there's still 8 weeks to wait until they've got, 8 weeks plus until they've got that double jab protection. We've all got the effects of the unlocking in England and Scotland to come. Actually, the situation could, as Vicky Ford was saying this morning, the Minister, Libby, you know, things can go the different way quite quickly.
Yes, they could, but they might not. And I think the thing, what was very interesting was what Rachel was saying, that at the moment she's even a bit optimistic on Twitter. People pile in and say, oh, no, it's all terrible, it's dreadful. Now, I've got sort of Yorkshire relatives. I know how all this works, you know. It is fun talking down hope, but I don't think it's useful. Mm. I think we should always hold on to whatever hope we have and say, yeah, that's a little bit of good news, and I shall carry on glancing into a shop to see whether it's crowded, to see whether to put a mask on, to see whether the staff have masks on, to see what is courteous to do. You know, I will be reasonably careful, and I think most people are somewhere on that track. But I think just being doomy and saying it's all going to be hell again come autumn is is a really poor idea.
Jessica texts us to say, if the government were to bring forward the date after which those who have had both jabs were exempt from isolating, it's possible that this would concentrate the minds of those younger vaccine-hesitant folk who seem to think that the risks of the vaccine are greater than the risks from COVID. 87222, if you want to text us, start your message with the word Times. Let's talk about the new health secretary, Rachel, Sajid Javid. He's had to apologise, actually, after there was this enormous douche over him using the word to cower from COVID. He tweeted saying that people shouldn't cower from coronavirus, announcing that he himself had had recovered from it, even though he was double jabbed and he caught it in the first place. But was it a poor choice of words, as he suggested?
I think it probably was a poor choice of word because that word has associations with being a coward and with a lack of bravery. And I know that the victim groups are very upset about this. But I think so much focuses on the word and less focuses on what he was actually trying to say, which is that he caught COVID, but because he'd been double vaccinated, the symptoms were very mild and he's made a full recovery. And I think what he was trying to get across, and I am usually not one to defend members of this government when it comes to their boundless optimism and some of the ridiculous things they say, but I think the point he was making, which was, isn't it miraculous that thanks to this vaccine and the vaccine rollout, something that was very, very serious and potentially deadly is now something mild and easy to recover from, and maybe we as a society don't have to be so terrified that we are afraid to leave the house because we have this miraculous scientific development. That was actually a really positive message. And yes, it was a poor choice of words. And yes, the idea, which I don't think he intended at all, that that people who have sadly died from the vaccine, it's in some way due to a lack of personal bravery. That was the accusation. Obviously, that is an unfortunate association to make. But the point is, thanks to these vaccines, we don't have to be as terrified as we've been for a year and a half. I think that's a positive message.
Libby, but was it an offensive thing to say, do you think?
No, it was possibly a poor choice of words, but I mean, anybody who wasn't looking for offence could see perfectly well what he meant, which we have to be sensibly careful and live with the virus because zero COVID is nonsense, as Australia is rapidly finding. No, I think Rachel's bang on. It was an unfortunate word. He apologised very sharply and graciously and quickly for the word. Really, end of. But I think anyone sensible knows what he meant. You cannot live constantly in a state of abject terror. Not now, because otherwise nothing will ever get going again.
Libby, tell us. Oh, go on, Rachel.
I would just say very quickly that he apologised, and that is also something that we don't see from this
government
away,
very
often.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time a government minister apologised. Boris Johnson certainly hasn't for all kinds of comments that he's made. So that's a change in tone as well.
Libby, tell us about Amy Winehouse. You're writing about her story, her legacy in the paper today, and how, what do you say, doom genius is a Byronic myth-making.
Yes, I think it is, and I wanted to take a kick at that and also to point out that addicts can and do save themselves. And I've been talking to several people, you know, for various other reasons, about Amy and people who knew her well. And the point is, she was extremely strong-willed. She had actually got out of the drugs. She had been clean for 3 years before she died. She died of alcohol poisoning. She was very, very thin, emaciated, you know, all the rest of it. It's very easy to kill yourself with alcohol that way. But I think we have to be careful how we tell these stories. You know, this is not a sort of a Britney or a Judy Garland victim of exploitation. You know, this was a strong-willed, brilliant musician who might in the end have beaten it. And I was terribly struck by what one of her closest friends, a young man who she'd grown up with from babyhood, you know, total platonic mates, great mates all their lives. And he sort of said, the thing is, you know, he's a teacher now, he works in this kind of area of young mental health. He said, you know, she could have beaten it. She very nearly did. You know, he reckons, having spoken to her near the end, that, you know, that one accidental, you know, that binge which resulted in the verdict of accidental death, needn't have killed her. And I don't think we shouldn't sort of zhush up this idea that any kind of young, brilliant genius, you know, like a Luke Jones who sort of shoots to the top of his profession
so quickly
is automatically doomed at the age of 20-something. Because it's not so.
Yeah.
And it's not so in music and it's not so in art. And you don't have to be on drugs and you don't have to be a wild rocker living a wild rock way. It's a legend which is quite damaging to a lot of young talent.
And that was, Rachel, we had on breakfast this weekend, the friend who she was was living with at the time. He'd known her since she was 12 years old, a sort of similar situation to Michael Collins, who Libby mentioned, sort of, you know, lifelong sort of platonic friendship. And he said that was one of the most tragic things about this story, was that actually she had beaten the drugs. She was about to beat her alcoholism, but just at that sort of final hurdle, it got her.
Yeah, and I think it's really sad that something that was actually a very short period of her life now seems to define her when we talk about her. I learned a huge amount from Libby's column, and it's made me want to go back and listen to a lot of the music and properly get into Amy Winehouse's music. But I think the point that we have a narrative about what rock stars are like or artists are like, and therefore everything that they do feeds into that, probably is the case. I think it's interesting that mention of Britney Spears there, who's obviously fighting the guardianship, her father running her affairs and her financial affairs, even though she's in her late 30s now. And that story, until very recently, hasn't got very much attention, I think, because we have this idea of Britney as somebody who messed up and had a very public nervous breakdown, so of course she can't handle her own affairs. And we forget the fact that, one, it was years ago, it wasn't inevitable, and quite a lot has happened since then, but these key moments of crisis seem to define these artists, because those are the narratives that we tell ourselves, and it isn't necessarily the case.
And in terms of changing those narratives, just finally, Libby, there was that documentary Reclaiming Amy on Channel 4 this week, which it contained lots of her sort of family and friends, and their purpose, they say, was to try and reclaim the narrative of Amy, to change the story. Is that ever possible, do you think, even 10 years later with someone or Amy Winehouse, or are we quite set in our ways? Is the sort of narrative which we all kind of lapped up at the time still burned in our memories?
I don't think, I mean, a lot of people didn't lap it up because they didn't really even notice it much. I mean, let's remember that not everybody was an Amy music fan. In fact, her best friend wasn't, you know, they didn't really like it. But I think the legend in general can be challenged. And also, I like the way that everybody in her family was very, very anxious not to blame anybody. Say, look, we all make mistakes of one kind or another in all our lives, you know. But no, that's not what happened. She was strong-willed. She was herself. And to me, what that film did, it reclaimed her as an agent, as somebody who really had agency and power over her own life, and was not some kind of poor, wilted, sort of broken sparrow, which is a legend which grows around people like that. And I think that, you know, girls are tougher. Also, the other thing is, young girls should not be have it constantly hammered into them how incredibly fragile they are and how their mental health is at terrible risk from social media and so on. You know, I think we sometimes have to say, actually, girls are stronger than what you think they are.
That was Libby Purvis and Rachel Cunliffe. Up next, super young parish councillors.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Now, time for some young parish councillors.
Three super young councillors. We have got Freya, Connor and Jess. They are all 18 years old. They're all councillors elected this year. We were just hearing about the many, many leaflets you had to distribute in the hope of getting elected. Thank you so much for your time, all three of you. I'd like to start, first of all, with your life before you got your calling. Freya, what were you doing with yourself before you decided to start doing this?
Well, I was just, obviously I was at school studying for my A-levels. Yes. And the other thing I was doing was a lot of volunteering within my village, particularly within the village scout group in the Beavers and Cubs, so the younger years.
And Connor, what about you?
I was just involved in a lot of local community groups, trusts and organisations, just sort of getting my name out there. And it's sort of been a journey over 5 years for me personally.
Getting your name out there, how do you mean?
Just getting involved in local community groups, meeting people, influential people, councillors of county, district and town councillors, really.
So 5 years ago, I'm dreadful at maths, you're 18 now, so that was when you were 13, you were thinking, I need to get my name out there.
Yeah, I met a really influential former Bexhill town mayor and who actually eventually became a friend. And if it wasn't for him, then I don't think I would actually be here speaking to you today, really, because he taught me some of the key things about being a councillor that have encouraged me to stand in the last election.
Gosh, so even then you thought, this is what I want?
Definitely. Why not?
And Jess, what about you? Was it that early?
No. obviously I've just finished my A-levels as well, but I've always had an interest in politics, maybe not from the age of 13, knowing what I want to do, but yeah, it's always interested me, so I'm glad I can finally do it.
And what kind of thing were you doing? So way before you'd even thought of maybe, you know, standing for elected office, what were you up to? A-levels aside, I mean, that's busy stuff anyway.
Yeah, well, I did also a lot of volunteering as well. A lot of clubs and things that you do at school, really. Just the normal things you do as a teenager.
And was that out of boredom or was that out of, I would like to do some kind of public service in the future and this would set me up well for it?
Yeah, definitely that. Because I feel like you do have to start quite young if you want to get into this sort of thing. So.
And was anybody coaching you, pointing you in the right direction like they were with Connor?
No, not really. obviously, there were some good people that I've met along the way and they've all been very helpful. Mm. Yeah, teachers are a big part of that, I'd say, at school. They're very good with that sort of thing.
And Freya, what about you? When did it sort of become to a point where you thought, actually, this is in the service of something in terms of I'd like to kind of do this as I'd like to be a parish council or councillor at some point, so this is why I should do this?
Well, for me, it was around 2019. I was able to go on the World Scout Jamboree. And as part of the closing ceremony, they had Ban Ki-moon speaking.
Ban Ki-moon?
Yeah, so he was really inspiring about...
That's not bad for a scout jamboree. Ban Ki-moon, I said that's a really decent booking. UN Secretary General.
Yes, yeah. So he was really inspiring about everybody needs to get out, be part of their community, not wait for others to lead. And it really, really hit home with me. So when I then got back home off that, I started looking at ways that I could get involved.
So you got home and you said, Mum, Ban Ki-moon said, this is what I need to do.
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
So I started attending the council meetings just as a member of public. And it was there that everyone was really encouraging. And it, sort of led from there.
So I want to know about how you all went from thinking, OK, this is what I'd be keen to do. I'm going to start doing some volunteering and some bits and bobs, which will be a good thing to do, but also will set me up well for maybe running for elected office. How did you actually go about finding a place where you can stand and doing all the kind of nuts and bolts of actually getting involved in an election? Connor, when did you start actually looking into that side of things?
It probably would have been 2 or 3 years ago now, really. I represent St Mark's in Bexhill, and it's a really, really great place. And I lived there for 14 years, so I know everything. I was educated there, so I know everything about it. And that was the key place that I was intending to stand in May. And thankfully, I ended up getting elected.
And how hard was it, first of all, to get involved and get your name on the ballot paper and all of that? Did you have to do lots of wheeling and dealing?
I stood on a platform called Bexhill Independent. So there was a few of us that all helped each other with the paperwork, with the social media and things like that. So it was sort of like a group effort, really. So we all, you know, if someone was weaker on one thing and somebody was stronger, we would help that person. So we were all chipped in when needed.
And Jess, what about you actually getting on a ballot paper, finding a place where you could put your name on a ballot paper? How did that start?
Probably at the beginning of this year. I think for me, I didn't realise how it was actually quite easy to like get started. It was when the election process began that it got a bit more like difficult. But for
difficult
me,
in what that, way?
It was hard work. I did a lot of leafleting. And just the whole process, it was quite stressful, to be honest. And like even because as an 18-year-old, like this was my first time even voting, never mind actually being in the election. So like,
hang on, are you saying the first scary. Person you voted for was yourself?
Well, I couldn't vote for myself, but
yeah,
potentially, yeah. So it was quite nerve-wracking, but I think it obviously went quite well. I hope it did. But yeah. It was stressful.
And you say it was stressful. So how were you, at the same time you were still juggling what, like geography coursework and revision?
Yeah. Yeah, well, at the time, obviously we didn't, the exact A-level exams weren't quite what they would normally be.
I was doing
the evidence collecting for my grades and it was all quite stressful. But yeah, I managed to do it all, so it's fine.
Freya, what about you? When did it get to the point where you thought, okay, I'm going to find a place where I can stand for some kind of elected office?
Well, I'd been thinking of standing for quite a while, sort of pretty much since I'd started going to the meetings. I thought that this was something I wanted to do. And obviously the elections were supposed to be last year, so I didn't think originally that I was going to be able to stand. And then obviously this year, I was able to, and I turned 18 the day before the papers were supposed to be in.
Oh, well done.
So it was quite stressful, making sure everything was all sorted, and I made it to the council offices just in time.
And at the same time, like Jess, and I assume Connor as well, you were up to your eyes in, as Jess said, not necessarily revising for exams, but all the evidence collection for your A-levels and the like.
Yeah, absolutely. And like Jess, I also did a leaflet job. I was really lucky because I was able to have help from a couple of the other councillors that were also standing and some that were standing down that helped me with my leaflet jobs. But yeah, that was really quite a challenging time.
Tell me about these leaflets, all of you. Connor, did you do leaflets as well? What was your slogan?
I didn't really have a slogan, but I must have delivered about 3,500 of them over a 3 or 4 week period. And I was really cutting it fine to get them out in time.
Did you have like a photograph on them with you with your arms folded, looking like you meant business?
No, I just ran across to the roundabout and took a picture in the middle of the roundabout, really.
Jess, what about you? What was on yours?
It was just like the normal manifesto sort of thing, but it was just a leaflet, really, but I also delivered loads of them. God, there were so many.
But did you have your face on it? Was it with you shaking hands with local dignitaries?
Yeah. No, it was just
you
my
with
face.
Banky Moon.
To be honest, though, I just used my school picture. I didn't know, because I'm very new to it. I didn't know what to put on it. it was me alongside some of the other councillors that were hoping to be elected in the ward. So.
And Freya, what about you?
I did have a picture of me on it, and mine pretty much just focused on telling people that I was a young person that could bring a fresh perspective to the council.
Nice.
I didn't have to deliver as many as Connor did. I only had to deliver about 700.
But still, that's a few days' work. Tell me about actually getting elected, all of you. Connor, what was the moment like when your name was read out and there was an enormous number of votes afterward?
It was quite surreal, actually. I couldn't, to be honest with you, believe it. I didn't think an 18-year-old would get elected, especially in Bexhill, because we haven't had a council of this level since 1974. So it's a brand new council, brand new faces. And it was quite surreal to be, well, the youngest councillor ever for Bexhill Town Council. So it was a really unreal moment.
Did you punch the air and shout something uncouth?
Might have done,
Jess, what about you? Tell us about the moment.
I was in shock, to be honest. It was a lot to deal with in the moment because I wasn't expected to be like elected at all. Like, especially like the first time round, like running, I didn't expect it at all. So I was like very shocked.
Were there lots of crusty old hopefuls looking at you quite angry?
Well, they were okay. They were fine. Yeah.
And Freya, yourself, obviously all of this happened in COVID secure ways. So did you have sort of parents and friends with you when they read out your name?
Yeah, so I was actually at home. So I went and the village clerk sent out the council clerk sent out the results. And so I had a look online for the results. And the biggest thing for me was finding out just how many votes I'd got. I'd managed to come third in the election out of 12. And it absolutely blew me away.
Well done. And I wonder why you think you all won. What was it that you were sort of saying you were going to do? What kind of platform were you standing on which you think actually resonated with the people in your area? Connor, is there one thing in particular that you think, I was saying this and that's why people liked what I had to offer?
I think it was really that fresh face, fresh voice, fresh perspective.
That's a slogan. You know, you said you didn't have a slogan on your leaflet. You should have put that.
That's a good one, actually. I'll have to use it in 2 years' time. I think it was because they haven't seen my name, they haven't seen my face on the ballot papers before, so it was something new. And like I say, it's just fresh, fresh, fresh.
Yeah. And Jess, what about you?
Yeah, same for me, really. I think it's nice to see different people running, to be honest, because it's very easy for there just to be the same sort of group of people. And I think people liked that it was something different, new. Something that they could put their faith into.
But Freya, come on, I'm going to have to, politician style, I'm going to have to nail you down to something. Freya, what about you? What were you sort of saying that you do that people thought, that sounds great?
To be honest, I do think it's similar to both Connor and Jess. It really is just the fact that where I live is quite a small community, so it is very often the same people that you see getting involved and doing the same thing. And people wanted someone representing them on their council that was going to provide a different voice that represented a different part of the village.
Yeah. And for yourself, what is it that you wanted to do that meant that you actually stood for this position? Was there something actually in your area that you wanted to solve or help with?
I really think that getting young people's voices across is the most important thing, because in a village like mine, they can very often be left behind and forgotten about because the population is definitely the older end of the age spectrum. So I found that even just by attending meetings and being there, has sort of jogged everybody's memory that young people do exist and that we are an important part of our community.
Yeah, but what kind of policy area, what kind of thing that the council does were you sort of particularly most keen to get involved with, Freya?
Well, we wanted to make change, sort of, there's a lot of environmental changes going on at the moment. So we've had some things about solar farms and also housing, keeping the number of housing developments down within the village.
Yeah. And Jess, what about you? Is there something which you're particularly keen that you wanted to actually achieve or do or get involved with now you're in the job?
Well, kind of like Freya, to be honest, I want to go into schools and talk directly with young people about the importance of getting involved in this sort of thing, and even just voting makes a huge difference. As well as also housing is a big one for us as well. So
housing.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, everyone needs a house.
Yeah, but I mean, is there a particular problem for young people, young working people, actually trying to get housing in the area?
Well, that's an issue everywhere, really, isn't it? But, you've got to manage the amount of houses coming in, but you don't want too many in a certain place. You know, it's all very quite complicated, so...
Connor, what about yourself? So, in terms of things that you actually wanted to achieve in the job, what were you thinking about?
Well, during the campaign, it was really, I was getting a lot of people want more leisure facilities in my area, because the area I represent, it's a really mixed bunch of people. And there's a lot of families with new housing developments happening. There's a lot of families and young children coming in, and it's just about, are the parks up to scratch? You know, is the beach friendly? Things like this. It's a lot of leisure facilities, but like Jess and Freya, we've got a big problem with housing developments happening in small areas where the infrastructure is not actually there, not available. So it's about, okay, well, they're coming. We need to make sure the parks are up to scratch for the families and the children. Is there enough school places, doctors' places? So it's just about thinking of the wider spectrum rather than, right, we're not having them. Okay, they're coming. What can we do?
And how have you found the job, Connor? Now you're actually starting to do it, and I imagine people are getting in touch with you, constituents, people who live in Bexhill. Is it what you expected?
Yes, is the short answer. Definitely what I expected. It's nice to be able to work across with different authorities, my district counterparts, my county council counterparts. You know, as Bexhill Town Council, we're new. We don't know exactly what we're going to be in charge of and what we're not. So it's nice to confide in my district councillors and my county councillors. Okay, you can do this, you can't do this. And it's nice to be able to work across the spectrum.
And yourself, Jess, did you sense any wariness when you started the job from colleagues thinking, who is this child?
Well, I think everyone noticed that I'm very young. I think I don't look very old either, so that doesn't really help me. But they've all been very supportive and helpful, so it's going well so far.
Yeah. And Freya, what about you? As expected, did you sense any tension when people saw this very young new councillor sort of wading into their patch?
No, for me, everyone was really encouraging. They really wanted new voices to come in. It's been better than I could have imagined.
And I wonder what all of your goals are. How long do you think you're going to stick at doing this? What's next? And what the end point is, Freya? Have you thought about that? Is there something in the far distant future that you're thinking about that'll be me?
Not really. I'm taking it as it comes. Obviously, my term is 4 years. So just sort of seeing it as it goes, really.
Years and years ago, someone asked me this, sort of a boss type person. I thought it was the best question, which was not, oh, what's your dream job? But what is your absolutely wildest dreams, the best it's ever going to go? Don't hold back. What is the thing which would blow your mind to end up doing? Freya, what do you think it would be? And would it be in politics?
I think it would probably be working with other parish councils. So there's working sort of within local politics, and particularly in small rural communities.
Westminster?
Possibly.
Connor?
Well, if we're not holding back, I'd like to be Prime Minister, and I've said that for the last 5 years to everybody. Yeah. If we're talking realistic, Member of Parliament.
And Jess, what about you?
Same as Connor, really. I guess we might be fighting for the job.
Well, you can come and argue the toss about it on Times Radio when you're actually in that position. Just finally, with you all, I'd like to actually sort of have a bit of a policy discussion. If we're talking to maybe three future MPs or prime ministers, you'll have seen the news this morning about the reporting this morning about how we get young people to actually get the vaccine to ease with our exit from the pandemic. One idea apparently being floated by the Prime Minister is to require students to be double jabbed if they want to get in their halls of residence or go to their lecture theatres. I wonder what you think about that, and also the suggestions of, you know, needing to be double jabbed to get into Premier League football games, they need to be double jabbed in the autumn to get into nightclubs. Freya, is this the kind of thing that you could get behind?
Absolutely. I think it's absolutely vital that everybody has both jabs. I mean, I've had my first dose. I'm waiting to have my second. And I think that's a really important thing to do.
Connor?
Like Freya, you know, I've had my first vaccination, and I would implore on everybody to get their vaccination, and I would get right behind the Prime Minister. Everybody likes enjoying themselves, whether it be in a pub, a nightclub, football game. And if that is how the medical advice and the Prime Minister think that's the best way to encourage people to get a vaccine, then go for it.
But Jessica, could this not go too far and actually just turn people even more against the vaccines? If the idea of it's being forcibly pushed on them, and, you know, reasonable aspects of life are being cut off from them if they don't actually comply?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a hard one because you don't want to take anyone's individual choice away. But at the end of the day, the vaccinations are there to help and protect us. So I think it's really important that we do make sure that everyone is getting them as much as possible. So,
but what about actually, it's a big thing to try and turn around. As I mentioned earlier, it's a third of 18 to 29 year olds who haven't even got their first dose yet. Freya, does that surprise you? Or is that, you know, speaking to other, you know, friends of yours, does that sound about right?
No, that is a surprise to me, actually, because everybody sort of in my community and people around me are all really for and have all had their first dose. So that is a shock to me, actually.
And Connor, what about you? Is that a surprise?
It is, actually. All of my family and all of my friends that are 18, 19 have been vaccinated and are in favour of having the vaccine.
Good to talk to you all. Good to get your view on that story, which we're all talking about a bit today. That is Freya Davy, Connor Winter and Jess Mickey, all of them very, very young councillors, all of them 18 years old. As I mentioned at the top of this, we're always talking about councils and local councillors and Jackie Weaver and all of that. But here are three people who are actually elected to the job at such a young age when battling all the A-levels for Argo.
Some super young parish councillors. That is it from us. Do subscribe if you want to get this podcast up your phone or whatever whenever there's a new one. And you can listen live if you want on the Actual Times Radio. Matt's show, which I'm covering this week, is on 10 till 1. You can get that on DAB Radio on the Snazzy Times Radio app. Speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads barging into your favourite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.